levantaré mi bandera, alzando mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí, mira, no existen fronteras. Yo levantaré mi bandera, oh.
Levantaré mi bandera, alzando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí, mira, no existen fronteras. No, no, oh. Y es que hay mucho sentimiento, lo grito al viento, de ser latino nunca me arrepiento.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Revolución's very first Indigenous Latinidad panel, part of Hispanic Heritage 2022 virtual event presented by Celso. I am your host, Rafael, aka the Latin Babbler. I am joined with our editor-in-chief, Nicole Antoinette Urbina Ruiz. Before we introduce our guests, I just want to turn around and give a huge shout out to our presenting sponsor, Celso, who actually took a chance with us. It's the first hemp-infused beverage inspired by Mexican flavors and cultures. It's a healthy soda replacement, sparkling water upgrade. I don't even like sparkling water, and I'm actually like a big fan of these, so they're actually really good. Celso is a women, Latina, and queer-owned company proposing a Mexican-style cure for stress and anxiety to find happiness and adversity, hence our tagline, Vivo el Momento. Now that we went and gave them a shout-out, I want to introduce our amazing guests, our amazing panelists. We're going to go first with a multilingual Indigenous, I'm going to say that, is it Quechua? Quechua? Aymara? Because I want to make sure I get it right. Artist, actress, and TEDx speaker from Peru, who is trying to break stereotypes and educate society in regards to Native Americans through storytelling. Welcome to the show, Cisac Isbe.
Thank you. Yes.
We got to try to get through these intros, man. You guys got long intros, man. Some of you guys have done some amazing stuff. It's crazy. All right, so let's see. Our second guest is an Ecuadorian-American filmmaker from New York City. He has his work picked up by HBO, and he is also the founder of the 30 Under 30 Film Festival, which screens 30 films from 30 directors under 30 years of age. The recipient of the Inclusion Fellowship, sponsored by LALIF and Netflix. Everybody, welcome Sebastián Rea.
Woohoo! Yes!
All right. And our very last but not least, obviously, her films have been screened in several film festivals, including Palm Screens International Short Fest, San Diego Latino Film Festival, Holly Shorts. She has worked in various areas of the film industry and television, including on TVs and shows for Sony, AVC, and Marvel. Her latest short film, The Wrecker, was part of the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival. Welcome, Cristi Uribes.
Thank you so much.
That was a lot. You guys, y'all need to stop having all of these titles, like all these achievements and stuff coming in there. Everybody, you guys asked us for this panel. We've been asking all year what panel people wanted to see, and everybody wanted to be in touch with their indigenous roots. So that is why we're here. And the reason we're here is because, look, as Latinos, as our community, we are here to deliver. It's 826 different indigenous people living in Latin America alone and in the Caribbean. And it's estimated that the population is well over that. So it's amazing. One in four, 25% of Latinos, AE adults, have said that they consider themselves indigenous or Native American, such as Maya, Nahua, Taino, Quechua, Aymara, Quechua, among others. So I hope I pronounced all of those right. So that is an amazing, and we have amazing stories to tell. And Cristi and Cisa and Sebastián are going to be the ones to help us deliver that message today as part of our WAFI programming. So we always start off with origin stories. It's almost like Marvel. We need to find out where you guys came from, how you guys did this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Some of you guys have amazing ones. And even if it's short ones, it's okay. We're all right with that. So I want to know, we're going to go round robin here. What is the origin story? We'll start with Sebastián.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be part of this panel. I also wanted to take a moment to recognize all our ancestors and everybody that have come before us, for us to be here today and for us to tell those stories. So I think my origin story is that I was born in Quito, Ecuador, actually Guayaquil, Ecuador, but my family's from Quito. And I was raised in New York City my whole life. And I would travel back and forth to Ecuador to see my family every summer. So my summer's out there. I always knew that I wanted to be a filmmaker, specifically a director. Before I even knew what it meant to make movies, I just knew, like, after I saw a movie, the directed by came right after, and that's what I wanted to be. So it was always like that. It was tough to have that career in my head, because as a young Latino, indigenous, queer, a young person growing up in New York City, my family was not very supportive about joining the arts. You know, it was always like, be a doctor or a lawyer or something practical. But I knew that I wanted to tell stories, and that for me was very natural, and it was my calling, so I wanted to do that. And ever since then, I've always wanted to tell stories that took place in Ecuador and in New York. I have like a dual perspective of culture, because I'm not from here, or I'm not enough, like not Ecuadorian enough because I was raised in New York City, and I'm not American enough because I'm an immigrant. So I have this like middle ground, and I think that perspective is really interesting. And for me, getting in touch with my indigenous roots has been really important, because, you know, growing up, my grandparents are Quechua from the Cotopaxi in the Andes region in Ecuador. And growing up, there was always a division between, you know, being light skin and being more European versus being indigenous, and embracing that, because there's a lot of self racism and perpetuated that in our culture. So it was really important for me to kind of separate those and start to break those stigmas down, especially later on in my life when I realized that, you know, also queer, and a lot of indigenous societies honor their queer members. So for me, that was like, you know, being part of that community enabled me to see that I was part of a bigger picture. And I wanted to bring that to the front and tell stories about that, and, you know, pass the torch and just create the bridge between our cultures together for our future generations.
That's amazing. Cisa, what about you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was born and raised in Peru in a very tiny city called Tacna. It's literally in the desert. But my whole family, they come from the Andes and the Altiplano. We are Quechua. We are the people from the Andes. And I'm pretty sure you heard about the Incas, you know. But we come all the way before that. I didn't really know too much about my indigeneity because of different... basically because of discrimination. So the fact that my grandparents moved to a city and have to assimilate, basically they have to sacrifice the fact of speaking our language because they didn't want us to have a funny Spanish accent, or, you know, they just wanted to protect us. So I didn't really know too much about my heritage. I didn't learn the meaning of my actual last name, which is in Quechua, until 2 years ago. And, you know, I feel like many of us have been completely disconnected from our ancestors, our ancestry, because of systematic racism, because of discrimination, colorism, you know, and there's so much pain that we are, you know, healing. But yeah, that's basically my story. One day I say, like, you know, I want to learn more, and I just couldn't stop learning since then. And the more I learn is the more I fall in love with my culture. Yeah, with our culture, with our skin, with our hair, with knowledge. It's just so beautiful, and it's just nonstop.
Man, those are like amazing. Between you and Sebastian, you, Christy, you're up to bat, man. I'm hoping you can match these speeches. So go ahead, no, it's pressure. Your turn.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. It's real hard to hearts in here.
All right, then I'll just skip to, I got bit by a radioactive spider and became a superhero.
Hey,
so here I am.
That works.
Well, so I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and always knew we were Mexican, but it wasn't until like high school that my grandpa mentioned, oh, yes, by the way, we're also Yaqui, and I had no idea what that meant. I didn't know what Yaqui was the first time I heard about it. So, of course, you know, the curiosity just kicks in of like, why wouldn't we talk about that? Like, why didn't we know about that? And it wasn't because, you know, we were... you know, it wasn't because we weren't proud. I think we just didn't know. His mother was Yaqui and died very young. And so really that culture, that knowledge didn't get passed to us. So we didn't talk about it much. So yeah, just that really kicked me off for like exploring more about my culture, even just like my my identity in general. So went to UC Davis, started learning, started hearing all kinds of stories, realized how much I loved stories, how you can tell stories through film. So went to USC for film school and, just kicked off my career in television. So here I am. I'm so grateful for LaLeaf also giving me the opportunity
to
make movies again. Completely amazing. So grateful. So yeah, and thank you so much for having me also. Very excited to be here.
I was there for LaLeaf. We spent the entire 3 days. Well, it was 4 days. We were there from, I think it was Thursday through Saturday. And we were sitting there doing a ton of interviews and just spending time and just watching the joy. Cause I mean, that's literally even as crazy as it was, cause I know the Afro and Indigenous shorts were all on the same day. And that was just a crazy day. Okay. But the joy of everybody who was just trying to get their moment and be able to get be able to show off their piece of work and their story. I got to tell you, I left that event knowing that I had to kind of continue that somehow, some way. The joy that I saw that day, for me, it was just one of those things that was just like, there's got to be a piece of this that I can take with me to share somewhere else. And so here we are. We're trying to do it here. I do have a question, because each of you guys went into the film and I know that it's about stories, but I'm wondering, when did it click? Like, at what age did you guys were like, man, you know what? I kind of want to go into the entertainment industry. And then what was like your parents' reaction to that?
I started taking like film classes at Davis, like watching movies, writing papers on movies. I had a professor say, like, you know, instead of writing a paper, you can make a movie. I was like, oh, can I?
Interesting.
That's great. Yeah, let's do that instead. So that really that kicked it off for like, oh, great. Well, what stories do I want to tell? I guess I never really thought about it that way. So that, I think, in some way empowered me to go for it. I don't remember the conversation with my parents, but I can say that they have been 100% so supportive, never once questioned me, never once said, I don't know if you should go to film school and I don't know if you should, maybe you should think of something else. Like, always encouraging, celebrated every milestone, always encouraging. It's just wonderful. So also, if they're here, shout out to them, because love them. Couldn't be more proud to be their daughter.
So funny story, and I don't even know if she wants me to share it, but when I was there, her mom is like the biggest hype person. Like, she hypes her up tremendously. I was sitting, we were at the reception area, and then like part of the movie where they sell the popcorn and stuff like that. And her mom sees me with the camera. She turns around and she goes, oh, are you interviewing people? And I'm like, yes, we are. And she's like, well, my daughter has a short here that was accepted and she's going to be showing it today. And she was just upstaging her the entire way. It wasn't until that Christy walks in later and she's sitting there and she's like, and I'm like, yeah, your mom was telling me everything about you. And we didn't even, I don't even think we got the interview because it was so crazy. Like, she went from there to the short. So just what, small world. We were off camera. We were sitting there like, I think I've met you before. And I'm like, you know, you're definitely right. What age did you feel like, okay, I want to go ahead and go into the entertainment industry. I want to be an actress. I want to pursue that.
So the first time I thought about it, I was a kid, but immediately got shut down, but not because of my family. I think it was because of the TV that I was watching in that moment. The TV that we have in Peru, you know, for most of Latin America back in the 90s, it was just really bad, the representation of indigenous people. And I always felt like I just didn't want it to be there to play, you know, only just basically these characters based on stereotypes. And there's this one that is really bad. Tells the story of, it was actually a TV show of Indian woman who moved to the city, and she spoke like broken Spanish. She was like street smart, but she was like very uneducated, and you know, so those kind of things, like, I believe those stereotypes. And I was like, there is something wrong about this. I knew it. I felt it. And mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to be part of it. So because I felt like the whole TV industry, it was in that way in Peru. Also, Televisa didn't help that much. So so I just, like, immediately shut down that dream by myself. Became an accountant because I have been really good. I'm really good with math. But then eventually when I moved to New York City and just meeting all these people, like following their dreams, I was like, maybe I can give it a chance. Then I became an actress. And as an actress, I don't get too many auditions, you know, it's a thing. I get maybe one audition every 2 weeks, maybe two, like not too much. And most of them are also based in a stereotype. So I was like, well, we need more people behind the camera. We need more people directing, producing. And I have a voice. Like, I want to tell stories. And, you know, I made that decision now in my 30s, you know, that I want to do that. And people will tell me, wow, it's so late. Like, my family were like, oh my God, it's just like, you're not young enough. You know?
It's never late.
Yeah, no. I was like,
there's never a right time. Come on. Yeah.
There's a bunch of actors who turn around and made it in their 40s or even in their 50s. Like, that's never late. Yeah, that is a lie.
Yeah. I mean, I still act. I still get auditions, love my manager, my agent. Mm-hmm. But still, like, I love filmmaking. I really fall in love with filmmaking and screenwriting. And I'm looking forward to keep directing, keep, you know, telling stories from our perspectives. I think that's so important because we have so many people using our cultures as a prop just to spice things up. And they don't really tell stories from indigenous perspective, which is such a huge difference. So I'm looking forward to create more stories where I can uplift people who are indigenous and to promote that. And eventually, I don't know, have more indigenous people telling their own stories and we all grow together.
Yeah, very
absolutely.
Much so.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like you mentioned how it kind of like in like the stereotypes influence what roles you take on. How do you kind of decide which ones are the right roles to go for? Especially because like directors and producers are always so like hush hush with the scripts ahead of time. They'll kind of just give the most general descriptions.
Yeah, you know, as an actress, I don't really have a chance. It's just work. I gotta tell you, all of the roles I have, mostly, you know, the housekeeper, the nanny, the cleaner, the prostitute. That's what it is. I mean, that's reality. That's reality.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm not gonna pick and choose and say like, oh no, like it doesn't align. You know, if I want to be an actress, somehow I have to, you know, eat. So yeah, I do it, and that's a struggle that most of us go through. You know, if I'm going to wait, you know, that's why I'm like, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to create my own work, you know.
As you should. I love it.
Put yourself on the driving seat, right? Did we just time out or something?
No.
Oh, no. I was just hoping to let people talk because I don't want to take over the conversation.
No. Sebastián is next. Go ahead, Sebastián.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can, that's what my first earliest memory was of coming to the United States. And I remember watching Batman Returns in the big screen. And I was like maybe 4 years old, 5 years old. And that's what it triggered for me. Like at the end of that movie, like that's what I want to do. Like I want to work in this. I want to be part of that somehow. And ever since I was 5 years old, whenever someone would ask, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would just always say a director. And like I said before, like I didn't know what it meant because you know, I was 5, 10, like I didn't have any understanding of it. But the director was always the first name I saw when the movie ended. So that was for me, like that's what I need in my life. And it just felt natural and normal for me to go that way. I didn't have a lot of support in the arts growing up. But it was only through, you know, like teachers, creative writing teachers that I had in high school and things like that, that you know, encouraged me to continue writing and continue the creative arts. And they got me into programs that were like specifically for Latino artists in high school, for example, that recognized me. And that was the first time that I saw other Latinos that looked like me in those positions of power, you know, that were directors, that were actors, that were executives in the industry, that, you know, were Latino also. And I that was the first time that I realized, like, I can also do that. You know, it's not just me versus white America. Like, it's going to be, there are other people that I can admire and look up to. And after that, like, it really encouraged me to tell stories. Like you said, Cisa, like, it was really hard to identify and relate to characters I see on the movies or TV because they were usually white and they look like they don't have the same experiences. So it was really important to see characters and storylines that I can personally relate to, because that lets other people know that, you know, you're welcomed in this space as well. So for me, that was really always important to kind of build those bridges between my community and the industry. So, you know, I started to like intern and just like volunteer at like film festivals and stuff like that. And so it was really important to tell those stories myself, so that, you know, we didn't have to be the maids or the prostitutes or, you know, the drunks or whatever. You know, it's like, no, I want to give the Hollywood treatment to my people too. Like, I want to
for real. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I want to have Latinos in space where it's not about immigration. You know, it's like just an action story, you know, like, we deserve those kind of spaces too, where we're not only talking about our trauma and those negative stories. Like, we should occupy the same space and the same stories without having those trauma storylines behind us. So I always knew like that for me was important. And then the second moment for me was when I was turning 18. And a lot of my friends were undocumented immigrants too. And I never knew what that meant in terms of like graduation and going to college,
yeah,
getting a job in your, I just thought like, you know, all my friends would come with me to get it. But a lot of my friends were undocumented and couldn't learn that, oh, they have a whole obstacle that I have no idea about. How do I let other people know? And I started to tell stories, like short stories about immigration, documentaries about immigration, just like highlighting friends of mine when I was 18 and in college, to let other people know that a lot of the immigration debate that was happening at the time with the DREAM Act and things like that, and now DACA and all that, it was all like normal Americans, you know, who grew up, speak English, who have only know American culture. And so for me, film and cinema was a really important tool to create awareness and spread empathy about what was going on. And I kind of made that my job and my goal to tell those specific stories in order to elevate our people and put them in the spotlight and stuff.
Y'all have the most incredible stories, my goodness. So can you guys each tell us about like when you began really like delving into your indigenous roots and what it was like either growing up about like with your indigenous roots or like what it was to discover that you were indigenous. Let's kind of round robin it. Sebastian, go ahead.
So for me, growing up, so my family's from a small town in Quito called Yeruki, and Yeruki is just filled with like my family pretty much. Like, a lot of people make fun because we own like the deli and the bakery, and like we are people in the church. It's like a very small community. And whenever I would spend my summers over there, I would see like everybody kind of looked different, but kind of looked the same. And you know, we never really talked about like my indigenous roots, but you know, we all knew like, you know, Ecuadorian and this is the indigenous culture. But I did see how like a lot of my cousins who were a little bit darker, but they were American, they really loved to say like, oh, they had a European features, you know, like their eyes are a certain color or like their noses are this or whatever, their skin tone. So I saw like really early, like this divide between like being European, like having European descent, indigenous descent, Afro-Latino descent, whatever. And, you know, no one really talked about like my roots when I was young, but it wasn't until I grew up when I was in high school that my grandfather passed away, and we started to like look through a lot of his files, his records, his cédulas and things like that in Ecuador. And I started to see and like piece together like last names with with other tribes, and I started to learn more about like the indigenous, my indigenous identity really coming from my grandparents' side, and how you can trace it back like way before the Spanish, and there are like records of like family members, you know, like we're all like in part of an umbrella of our culture, and I wanted to learn more about it, and I wanted to learn more, and then my parents would always be like, oh, like don't, why do you want to know about los indios? Like, why do you want to learn about that? Like, you're not, that's not part of who you are. Like, you're American now, like whatever. So for me, it was like, I was always jaded because I didn't, you know, my parents were telling me not to go delve into it too much. And then I have like my American culture, people that are like talking about it. And I knew like, I wanted to tell the stories of like my grandparents who everybody was kind of silencing. And I didn't think it was fair to do that. So I took it upon myself. I was like, since nobody else in my family is like championing our indigenous culture, like it's up to me. And at the same time, that was like compounded with my queer identity. And no one knew that I was queer growing up. And I was like holding it to myself. But then as I started to learn about my grandparents and like where they came from and what are, you know, all the names in our town, what it's called and like what all the different words mean, I started to realize like, oh, I'm part of a bigger picture. And upon doing more research in college and things like that, I started to realize like, oh, like, you know, being queer is actually really important because a lot of our queer ancestors were killed very early on in when the Spanish South America and whatnot. And like, aside from that oppression, also the indigenous oppression. And I learned that indigenous cultures, like I said before, honored their queer members as shamans, as chiefs and, you know, soldiers, you know, warriors. And that was part of who we were. And even at our most natural point of society, our people encouraged and honored our queer members. So that for me was really important because I knew like, if I was living at that time, I would be honored, not like today where I have to like be oppressed and quiet and silenced. So I wanted to like learn about that. And that really empowered me to talk about it more and to come out and to like go forward and champion that and then use that as like, oh, my ancestors are, they want me to do this because I'm one of like the only ones left, you know, from that time. So for me, that's what I carry with me. And I want to tell those stories and bridge those gaps.
Yeah, I mean, I relate to so much what you're saying, Sebastian. Like part of it too is just like the idea of like maybe feeling a little timid about speaking about it because I have questions about whether I speak from a place of authority. You know, I didn't grow up with my Yaqui culture. I didn't. I didn't know the traditions. I can't speak to those stories. I didn't grow up on the reservation. So, you know, certainly I don't feel like I have the place to speak from a place of authority on terms of culture. But the, you know, you start to like feel the imposter syndrome and like justify the reasons for being. And then, you know, start to realize, okay, I can't speak from that authority, but I certainly can speak from an authority of pride and love. Yeah. And so, you know, absolutely. In the same way that I would proudly say I'm Mexican, I don't see why I shouldn't be proudly Yaqui as well. So, you know, I loved my grandfather. He loved his mother. We lost that knowledge. So the most I can, like, the way I can preserve it is by trying to learn as much as I can. And Sebastian, just like you said, like, telling those stories, my Lali film was a story about my grandfather. So, you know, making sure that some of that history gets passed on, whatever I know. But Nicole, you were saying like, how did I dig into it? I really like the way I started with my grandpa. Like, you know, to be honest, was a bit of a like detective and like interrogated him, like, literally interrogated him. I sat him down with a microphone and a camera and I was like, all right, what are you guys not telling me? This is going on record right now. Like, so like
the next short film.
No, literally. I need to see that released, girl. Oh my God.
The documentary that she created over that.
It was maybe not as dramatic as that. He was completely wonderful. And like, but I would like for hours just asking questions and like, you know, I'd get my aunt in on it and we would be like, all right, so tell us that one thing you said, you know, like, and just wild stories that it was just, you're kidding. Like you did what? What do you mean you did that? Like, it was just wild. Anyway, so just to say, that's how I started digging into it. I started at the source, and I will say, like, there were moments where, especially when I wanted to talk about Yaki, when I wanted to talk about his mom, and I could see that he couldn't give me answers, and that was, like, a little painful for him, like, because he didn't have that knowledge. So, just to acknowledge that, like, it was painful for him to not have it, and, you know, the loss of his mom was also the loss of culture. It was two losses, and I guess we have to start somewhere.
Time. Like, yeah, definitely agree. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean,
we got to carry the torch, so to speak, when we, at least if we're trying to learn. Like, I'm trying to learn my Taino culture. So I'm probably the only one in here that's got that Taino. I'm the Caribbean guy from the group. So for me, you know, trying, my cousin was the one that kind of propelled me into that. And he was one of the original members on the show, and he's huge on our indigenous roots and our Afro-Latino roots. And so he's the one that kind of got me going in that direction. Cisa, what about you?
Wow. I never really identified as indigenous or Quechua and Aymara because I have this, I will say, this misconception that you can only say that you are Quechua if you were born and raised in the Andes, or like if you knew the language, you know. But I think the moment I realized that I am Quechua, like, okay, my grandparents are Quechua from one side. My grandparents from my dad's side are Aymara. So I am. So how is this happening? Like, so many generations of indigenous knowledge, and then it stopped with my mother because my grandparents decided to move out of the Andes, and then it's stopping with me. So I just felt like with this huge responsibility, like, I'm going to have a family in the future, and I'm just, there maybe will learn Spanish and English, and what about our language, you know? And so I was like, no, like, countries were not around 200 years ago, 500 years ago. We have been here forever. Like, forever.
She wants to emphasize that, by the way. Forever.
In
case you didn't know.
And exactly. And, you know, that really changed everything, because then now is like the moment I decided, you know what, I'm going to reconnect. I started to talk with my grandparents, make videos, travel to the Andes, get to know more about the culture, because it really makes me happy. It's just something. I grew up thinking that my skin tone was terrible. I grew up thinking that I needed to stay away from the sun. I grew up thinking that my last name was terrible, that I needed to change my last name, because that's what I've seen in Latin America. That's what we see, you know? So, mejorar la raza, all of that. So that was the moment where I actually was like, validated myself, like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. Like, there's so much power. There's so much beautiful knowledge that there is waiting for me, and that I just went for it. I'll just went all the way for it. And, you know, identity, the indigenous identity is very complex, you know, but of course, I am not going to say like, oh, I was born and raised in the Andes. My experience is not the same with somebody who was born and raised there.
Of course,
but, you know, I'm using my voice to uplift my people. I'm raising my voice, you know, to connect with people that we never felt seen, you know. If you really think about it, it's like, how come we don't know our history? Like, how come we think that the lighter we are, the better we are? Why do we think like this? You know? So how come do we start to believe in those ways? And it's because we don't know ourselves. Like, this is the moment where I feel like many of us are like saying, you know what? This needs to stop now. I'm going to get to know, I'm going to be accountable and learn more about my heritage. And, you know, I remember when I moved to the U.S., I used to feel like the outsider, the immigrant, you know. Now that I know that my ancestors have been here and we're cousins with my cousins, Native Americans, I feel like so empowered. I'm like, no, this is my land. This is our land. We have been taking care of Abby Ayala for so long. So it's just completely changed my mindset. Yeah, so basically since the moment I decided to reconnect, I just went all the way. Very hard on it.
Boy, yes. She has. If you haven't gone on her TikTok or her Instagram, you can see it. I mean, you speak Quechua at all. Like, you're sitting there giving lessons. You're doing the dances. You're visiting the country and actually going into, like, some of the festivals. It's really amazing. And later on, you're going to have to teach us some of that. Mm-hmm. Like, right before. At least we can turn around and say goodbye and hello and all kinds of stuff. So we'll try to do that. I wanted to get into the media because we were sitting here talking about media. I got three filmmakers here in this panel, which was, like, really cool because you can't get any better than storytellers. I mean, that's literally where it all starts. If we're going to turn around and at least, you know, increase the awareness on our indigenous culture, what better way to do it than through three storytellers? So I read an article in Variety where we were talking about indigenous representation, and it was saying it was virtually non-existent, you know, varying by content. Representation was, like, found to be either zero or to 0.6, not one or not 6%. You know, when I was talking to Mr. Olmos, Edward James Olmos, he said the same thing, and that number is ridiculously bad. It's 0 to 0.6. You know, in Hollywood alone, 2021, the Hollywood Diversity Report showed Native representation at 0.6%. I'm a stats guy for those people who are listening. And they found that the roles, like writers, directors, literally anybody who was sitting there in the creative side was virtually like they had no Native representation whatsoever, which is abysmal. Mm-hmm. That's pretty bad considering the fact that we just mentioned 1 in 4, you know, people from the Latino community are starting to associate as indigenous Latino. So the funny part is that when they actually do cast indigenous people or have a role for the indigenous community, it's what Sisa was talking about, which they're either presented as savages, some type of, the stereotype, the red Indian throwing axes and, you know, chopping heads and all kinds of stuff, traditional Western genre, like what you see in those John Wayne movies and things of that nature. When I give you those statistics, and we'll go round robin, how does that make you feel, especially from the standpoint that you guys are starting to create these stories, and that's the type of representation that we currently have? So, Christy, I'll start with you.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too.
Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, aka the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fails, just a normal gay guy, I guess.
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watch.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on the big... Oh, wait. I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On the big cunty couch. Mwah.
I mean, yeah, I think there's like a long tradition of that, so it's not shocking. And I mean, but I will say I feel very hopeful. I think we're like beyond the days of Italians playing Native roles. I think people are much more cognizant of casting choices, so like that's incredible. And then I mean
we still got James Franco booking Fidel Castro, so we still gotta let go of that crap.
There's still work to be done, of course. We haven't reached utopia yet for sure, but I think we're heading in the right direction. I can fangirl all day about Red's Dogs. I don't know if you guys are watching that, but love that show so much.
And
like,
so good.
I think that it's like, it's just like, it's so amazing to hear like stories I don't have any experience with hearing that, seeing like really like complex characters, incredible. Just seeing how like even just their filmmaking process too, like, you know, everyone behind the camera also was involved who's indigenous, like just really, like, I feel like that's very encouraging. I could watch more TV shows about that all day long. So yeah, I think it's heading in the right direction.
What about you, Cisa?
Well, definitely I cringe every time I see that type of representation. But I got to say, it's really dangerous, you know, because you can believe those stereotypes. Like, you know, one of the reasons I was like...
Especially here in America.
Yeah. And we believe it too. Like, oh no, I am not like that. So I'm not indigenous, you know, because I am not, because I'm educated. Because I'm like, no, I cannot be indigenous. You know, why? Why? So those stereotypes are very dangerous. So, you know, that's the beauty, but also the dangerous part of a storytelling. That when you say something, you share something, like, people believe it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's good representation, bad representation. That's what is going to happen. So it's definitely a huge responsibility. And there is lots of ethics that needs to go through. And now I'm really happy, Chrissy, that you mentioned Reservation Dogs. Because Reservation Dogs, we're talking about a whole production that it comes from, like, indigenous. Like, Taika Waititi, he's indigenous. And, you know... all of these people are indigenous, and that shows like how important it is to tell, to let indigenous people tell their own stories.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because, you know, I can tell you there is lots of Peruvian films, but, you know, it's a person who identifies as mestizo or like, no, I'm not indigenous, you know, but they tell the story of this indigenous community, of this indigenous person from their perspective, like, oh, they're so poor because they don't have a fridge. Oh, they're so, it's so sad. No, like, we are happy people. We don't need a fridge in the Andes. It's cold. I'm sorry.
More than okay.
You know, so they say like, oh, it's so sad, those little kids, they're so dirty playing by the river. Oh my god, like, I have so much fun playing at the river, getting dirty, and those are like my best memories, you know. But from the perspective, they said like, oh, this poor guy, poor baby has like, you know, so that's already, you know, messing up this perspective and putting us like that we're in a, you know, in a place of saving, you know. So that's why I feel it's really important, ethics, and, you know, make sure that these stories are telling by indigenous people.
Your line just now is what's going to be our reel to show off this particular panel. That's gonna be, no, that literally. Is hilarious. She was all in.
Sorry, it's okay.
Yeah.
No.
Girl, you're like, invite me to the mud party.
That was. You think I'm gonna really cut that? No, I want everybody to hear it. That's gotta be loud and gotta be loud and proud. That's what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying?
I love it. So speaking of loud and proud, like, how would you guys kind of, or how have you guys kind of balanced your cultura with Americanized media, and how have you been kind of, what steps are you taking to like rally the troops and get out there and be like, no, this is actually society, this is what it looks like, y'all, like, what have kind of have you been doing for that? Let's kind of roundhouse it, starting off with Cisa.
Yeah, you know, it starts from, for example, my diet, you know, things like that. I, for example, do not eat meat every day. We don't need to, you know. In the Andes, you know, visiting, I realized that, yeah, they mostly eat grains and, you know, beans and different things. And I was like, why do we eat, you know? So it's just like I started analyzing everything. You know? So I don't eat meat every day. I'm very careful with plastic. I try to bike everywhere, you know. And if I see there's something, you know, comment, you know, I always speak up, you know, but I always make sure to do it from a place of love, you know, because I know many people are just not educated about it. And sometimes they can just speak up and I'm like, that's not right. That's not right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, really? That's, you know, and I'm telling you because I experienced that, you know, so yeah, definitely like taking, like, yeah, taking, and yeah, you know, just keeping my values here in this daily life. I know it's a different rhythm But, you know, for example, something that I love in the Andes is just like, you can just lay down everywhere inside of grass and just have this magnificent view. And then, oh, I step on cow's poop. Ooh, ha, ha, ha. You know, I just
go wash my feet. Did she find out when you got up? It's like, it was really comfortable.
Well, we use these ojotas, you know, those sandals, and you just go and wash it off in the river, you know, and then you have like, oh, you're playing with dogs, you know. So sometimes in here I do the same, you know, I just go for walks. Sometimes I just take my shoes off and I just like to feel connected with earth. And yeah, it's like literally I live close by. I'm really happy I live close by a park, a Prospect Park. So I just go for a walk, run every day. So I'm just trying to be connected as much as possible, which it gives you like some type of different piece. It's just something different that it hits, you know, and recognizing, you know, nature as well. And I'm going to be very sure about this, but for example, in the Andes, like we salute the like the mountains, we acknowledge our plants. We, when we do, for example, ayahuasca or like different rituals, ceremonies, we acknowledge them. We welcome the plants, like we treat them like you know, like equals. And then one elder told me that in the U.S., most of the apus, like the mountains, are like are sleep because people stop recognizing them, like they stop like acknowledging them, you know. And that makes me think that, oh my god, like I have been living here for a couple of years now and I never acknowledged the river, you know, that I have, or like in the Prospect Park, or like the little mountains. I'm like, oh my god, it just makes me so sad that I never acknowledged the land in here. So since then, I started to acknowledge them, you know, and say like, wow, thank you so much, and acknowledge the trees, and, you know, because they carry so much wisdom, you know, so many years. So yeah, that's how that's kind of like, it became now my daily life.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, Nicole, too, the way you're saying that, you know, the idea of like, how can I have my, like, how do I keep in touch with my culture in this Americanness? And for me, like, I, like, it's one and the same. Like, I am American, and therefore American to me means it's indigenous, it's Mexican, it's all the things, because that is what I am. So I think to say that Americanness is other is to give weight to the idea that Americanness is white. And I think that, like, let's not do that. Like, I am American. I am the things, like, you know, I'm in California, I'm in Los Angeles. This used to be Mexico. And before then it was the tribes who lived here. There were so many people, there's so much history to acknowledge. So to say that it's something other, I don't think so. I'm inhabiting it now. So I think just to hang on to that idea too, that I deserve to be here and I deserve to be American and Mexican and indigenous, all the things. I think that's how I try and stay in touch.
Yeah.
For those people who, you know, don't agree with that. Yeah. You can go eat, you know, kick rocks.
Yeah. No, piggybacking off of what Christy and Cisa said, you know, 100% on it. I think a big part of what we have to do is like reclaim our own spaces, you know, like we are entitled to these places, even though we felt and spent most of our lives and in our history in the past, like not being given the grace to have the space. I think, like you said, like we need to own it, and it's up to us, like our generation, future generations, to continue doing that work. And, you know, Cisa, what you said too, like a lot of what I do now is like recognizing the space that we're in, you know, like the sun, the nature, the wind. Like I meditate a lot, like in the mornings before I go to sleep, just a few minutes, just to have that moment of nothingness where I can like really connect with everything at the same time. And I think it's what, you know, I realized too, like out here, and now that I live in California, I also live in Los Angeles, but when I was in New York, I would go to the park. I would live in Queens and I would like spend my time at the park, like dig my feet into the soil. You know, there's something that I guess I heard that this is like scientific proof, but I just know that it's real because I feel it myself, you know, like you feel the pulsating of the earth, like underneath your feet. Like so many people don't ever do that because we're taught, you know, wear socks, wear sneakers. I get it. We need those things. But also we need like, we need the other few minutes or moments where we acknowledge the ground we're walking on or the trees that are getting air and, you know, the rain, you know, out here in California, I miss a rainy day so much. Like from New York, it used to rain.
And when we get rain, it's not really rain. It's like a drizzle and it's like somebody just like teasing you and it's like, ha, no, nah. And you're like, yeah.
And, you know, maybe like a big part of that is because not a lot of people acknowledge or recognize the rain anymore, you know, and now they feel like they're asleep and we have to teach our people and even everyone that, you know, they are our part, they are our equals. You know, we're here because of them and because of their grace. So we have to take those. And another thing too, just like thinking about our representation in media, you know, I've read so many times that Latinx and Black Americans are the ones that consume the most media in film, TV, everything, but we're represented the least. And the studio executives in Hollywood, they leave about $2 billion, I think, on the table every year because they don't want to cater to those demographics. And if they did make like a whole Latino or like an indigenous Latinx film or something and alienated, you know, white audiences, they think that we'll start to like win in terms of like the demographics and like the numbers. Like there are more of us and they'll realize that. Yeah. But, and it's like a big power struggle that Hollywood this day doesn't want to give up. Like they don't want to recognize like, okay, we can make all this movies for this whole section and still pull in millions of dollars, but they don't want to show like how important that is or even recognize that. So it's up to us like as creators and content creators to create stories and pitch stories where we're telling the indigenous side of things, where we infuse a lot of the indigenous folklore and culture into those perspectives and also encourage the fact that a lot of us are still learning. And, you know, we've lived our lives, most of our lives, our early life, not learning or given the chance to learn and really embrace our culture, our heritage, because we don't want to seem as an immigrant. We don't want to sound different. We don't want to be different, but that's what the world is. Like, we're never going to be one thing, you know, like we are all different. And until we start recognizing and embracing that, we have to really let others know that it's okay. If you don't feel like you're indigenous enough, but you feel like you do have indigenous blood and lineage in your culture, that's enough, because that little part of that indigenous line is what has survived through all that time. So you have to honor them, because if not, then they'll be lost forever. And we don't want that, because we're already living in like a post-apocalypse world where like all our history and our culture has been destroyed and it's gone. So we have to like build that up again.
You were talking about that, you know, grabbing onto the little bit of the indigenous side. The whole panel has been on trying to grab onto the indigenous roots. I'm speaking for those who now have commented on me when I created this. You know, they've run into some conversations on social media that they were just like, okay, well, one of the reasons I don't even tap that is because I run into some of those people on like Twitter and all kinds of stuff that just make it seem like you can't have both. And I think CISA was the one that mentioned it, where all of a sudden you can't be, I'm inclusive for everything. So for me, like, I'm Puerto Rican, Dominican. I am true to all parts of my heritage. It comes from so many different sides. We're diverse from so many, you know, sides, whether it's the Afro, the Spanish, the indigenous side. And so for me, like, I grabbed the indigenous side and I kind of just included it to create, like, finish out the pie chart, if so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what makes me complete. But for some people, they get treated as if they don't accept just one or the other. It's like a thing, like you're all of a sudden, you know, they use the word and it's used incorrectly in a lot of cases, like colonizers and this and that. If you go one way, it's the other. What do you guys say to somebody who's just simply saying, look, I want to keep the parts that I know, that I love, that I've learned, you know, to grow up with. And yes, I want to explore my indigenous side and I want to learn about it because I want to pass this on to my children, but I don't want to let go of who I known myself to be. And I don't know who wants to answer that question, whoever feels it's you know, it would be a message to give to all those people who are out there who are maybe like questioning that specific side of it.
I guess, I mean, the thing I would say is, like, of course, like, however anyone wants to identify, I feel like that's a very personal, a very personal journey. So I would never tell someone what they should or shouldn't feel or comfortable saying. I certainly struggled with some of that too. Like I said, feeling like an imposter. But I also like think when I think those thoughts, I think back to like, I imagine my ancestor. Like I imagine Dominga Somoza, like who I never met. And I imagine, would she be proud that I can say her name? Like would she be proud that I, you know, I don't know anything really about her, but I remember her. And I don't know her father's name. I don't know her father's name. I don't know any of those people. But, you know, to hang on to that, I think I don't see why there wouldn't be space for that also. That's what I would say. That's what I tell myself, at least.
Yeah. Does anybody want to add to that before we move on?
Yeah, you know, I have so many people that fight about my identity, about like, oh no, she doesn't look indigenous. She definitely has colonizer in her blood, or like, you know, but it's so funny because I know I have a great grandfather who was Spaniard, but I also have like a great grandmother that I know for sure she was Afro. You know,
yeah,
she was Africa descendant. But when you look at me, what do you see? You know, so race is just such, you know, it's such a it's just basically a construct, social construct. So I don't like, obviously it influenced my identity. But at the end, you know, I am choosing to identify a schedule because I am reconnecting. That is what it makes me happy. And I feel full. And I also, you know there's a lot of responsibility with saying I am Quechua and Aymara.
Of course. Right? Yeah.
And I'm taking it. So first, I don't want anybody to tell me who I am because again, that's my personal journey. And
see, I agree with that. I think that that's like perfect way to address that.
Yeah. You know, so many on my TikTok, oh my God, people fight about that.
And they like, do.
Yeah, they fight. And I'm like, you guys are not going to tell me who I am. Like, I am going through my own journey, you know, and it's going to keep changing. Who knows what's going to happen in the future. But right now, you know, I identify Quechua and Aymara, then I'm Peruvian, you know, and that's how it makes me happy. That's how I feel complete, you know, and I'm going to make sure that when I have kids are going to pass along all the knowledge I have, you know? So that's what it is. It's my decision.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Just to quickly add,
go ahead, Sophia.
I wanted to say that, you know, I also experience those kind of obstacles where, you know, some people that question your identity and question what your motives are. And I think you have to approach those things in a very delicate way because on one hand, you have to understand where they're coming from. And a lot of our indigenous culture has been taken for granted and has been
very much
reconceptualized to fit specific narratives for a specific purpose, usually run by like white American showrunners, TV producers, whatever. And I get it. And I understand that we have to be very protective about our culture and who's telling these stories. But at the same time, like we shouldn't be gatekeeping our culture from each other because one person may not know everything about the other person. And like you said, like Cissa said, like Christy said, like we have so much inside of us that we are just trying to understand ourselves and learn that for one person to be like, oh, you're not enough of this. You're not enough of that. You know, it's kind of messed up for them to say that when we are trying to just continue that lineage of our ancestors and
exactly
100% of a lot of anything. So we have to just, you know, come together in a more community and brother-sister kind of sense and help each other learn instead of telling, no, you're not allowed.
Okay, so I'm going to try to do like, this. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Christy. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was going to say, like, and like, it really is so uplifting. Like, I'll say, like, for Lalif again, like, to, you know, to feel like such an outsider, Lalif film that we did, that I did, you know, I cast a really wonderful woman, Lupe Cardona, and like she was so amazing about like she grew up in the Yaqui culture, and like I wanted to use Yaqui language in the movie, and like her patience and accepting, and like Sebastian said, I never felt like I was being judged because I was an outsider and I didn't know. Yeah. And like, it just is so encouraging. It makes me want to dive more.
Yeah.
Like it makes me, and I feel like that's maybe what we should be aiming for is the yes. And like, not one or the other. Yeah. It's the yes. And
I think having a complete picture of who you are, you know, from a cultural and a diversity standpoint is like really important. I want to ask one question to Sebastian, and then we're going to try to see if we can play a game of round robin here, just to kind of like, you know, lighten the mood a little bit on the discussion. So, but I know that you actually are part of the mentor program for like the Smithsonian Institute Latino Centers of Young Ambassador Program. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what exactly you do for like mentoring?
Yeah, the Young Ambassador Program at Smithsonian Latino Center. Well, that's the first program actually when I was in high school that encouraged me and encouraged me to become an artist, because they were accepting submissions from Latino artists across the U.S. and 10 artists were selected, and then they brought them to D.C. and kind of they just put you in touch with creatives and other executives in film, art, music, television, etc., that are Latino, so that a lot of younger artists that are Latinos could see themselves and you know, see themselves be that in the future. And it's been going on for so long now, and as a mentor there, what you know I'll do is I'll mentor incoming high school students that are artists as well, and I will, you know, just mentor them or teach them about filmmaking. Be sort of like their springing off point where they have ideas and questions about the industry, what type of jobs are available, what they should be doing and how they should be networking and what resources they should be going into. I just kind of point them in the right direction. And for me, it's been very important to do that because, you know, the Smithsonian is a huge institute, one of the only institutes that are in the U.S. that are really that have a position of somewhat power and are recognized in the world here in America. So for me, it was always important to, like I said before, just like create a bridge between the different places. And, you know, it was, I don't want to say lucky for me, because it was a lot of hard work to get myself into the film industry and what I do now today, you know, working very close to like Hollywood people. I started off nowhere near that. You know what I mean? Like I started off in this very random, secluded place in Queens, like nowhere close to Hollywood at all. But I just... volunteering my time, spending all my time in film festival circuits, in places where films is a big community, and just getting to know as many people as possible. For me, like that was a networking that saved me, because in Hollywood, you'll learn that it's nothing but relationships. And those are the people that are going to carry you to the next level. So for me, I just wanted to make sure that my community, like my friends, Latinos, Black, Indian, whatever, that don't think they belong in the Hollywood circle, I want to let them know that they do. And I can help them bring them in by just connecting you with another resource, because that's what I didn't have. And I want to give that back as much as possible.
Very cool. Very cool.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it's an awesome program. I was curious about it because we saw it on your bio, and I was just like wondering, okay, because I've never heard of the program. So for me, it was like really intriguing to find about that. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to play a game of fast questions. Each of you guys are going to turn around and answer it. You can say it all together where it doesn't matter. It's just going to be one giant mess. We're going to try and get through it and try to do it through it within 60 seconds or less. Okay, you guys ready?
Yes.
Here we go. So all three of you guys can answer at the same time. So we're not, you know, it's not a round robin type thing. All right, favorite musician?
Kendrick Lamar.
Look at that. Oh, he was fast, man.
Oh, dang.
He had that on his
pocket. He had that in his pocket.
He had that ready. Look, Tista's still thinking about it.
Okay. I want to say it. Tista's upside down.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
All right. Hot coffee or iced coffee?
Iced coffee.
No coffee.
Iced. No coffee. Oh, Sebastian is none. Ooh. And then you got a hot and cold. That's very cool. All right. So who likes texting and who likes talking?
Texting.
Neither.
Oh, okay. All right. So we're going to have to email her. She's probably just an email person. There you go. All right, oh so favorite Latino dish. Favorite Latino or indigenous dish. I'm going to add that on there. There you go.
Empanadas.
Tamales.
Empanadas. This.
Empanadas. We got tamales.
Ají de gallina.
What's that?
Ají de gallina.
Who? Ají de gallina. Okay. You want to say that in English for the people who don't?
It doesn't make sense in English.
Ají de gallina. That's like, what is that? That's like garlic chicken. I think that's what it is. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Pepper, I think I kind yellow of pepper, yellow pepper chicken, something like that. Yeah. All right. If you were to visit one place, you can only do this one time in your lifetime and you're never going to be able to go back. If you had one place to visit, where would you go?
Inside of the pyramids of Chichen Itza.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Dang. Dang. Wow. Let me.
She can I come with you? Can I second that?
I think we're just all going to jump on that. I think.
Yeah.
All right, favorite TV show growing up?
Yeah, literally.
Growing up?
Oh. Yeah.
Wait, who these?
X-Files.
Oh, X-Files. Man, X-Files is
good. That's been a minute that's a good show, since I've heard of X-Files. Whoa.
X-Files is good.
I'm older.
I'm 46. Nobody's older. So, all right. I'm the oldest guy here. I'm going into grandpa stage. All right, yeah. So let's see. For those of you guys who are into sports, favorite sports team?
Ecuador.
The Niners.
The soccer team.
The soccer team?
Yeah.
Soccer team? Okay, the national soccer team. That's fine. That's cool. All right, so if your life was a song title, what would it be?
A song title? Like
a song title. Oh, if a your song life, title. Yeah, if your life was a song title, what would it be?
My life was a walk.
I would say the song El Apagón. I really relate to him.
El Apagón?
Yeah.
Hey, okay. I love that. Go.
That's a good one.
Well, I thought we needed to create the song.
No. if your life was a song title, what would it be? Yeah, I'm not asking you to create a whole ass song here in the middle of the show. Oh, hit me, baby, one more time. All right, so after a long day's work, what is your go-to drink?
Water.
Okay, Sebastian is just way too natural for this whole conversation. He's all like, agua. He's going agua. Who else?
Agua, yeah.
Agua, that's your go-to? Christy's gonna go wine.
I'm gonna say margarita. Ooh. Sure.
Margarita, okay. Hey, a margarita shot. All right, so she's alive for the party, and I don't drink, so I'll be driving everybody home. All right, so let's see. If you were granted one free wish, what would it be?
To have been taught Quechua and Aymara.
To have been what? I'm sorry?
To have been taught. Que me hayan enseñado mis lenguas indígenas.
Because you're teaching it yourself, right? Like you're teaching it to yourself.
Yeah, I'm taking it, but it's not the same.
It's just not the same.
Yeah.
You feel the authenticity of it of learning it from the.
When I listen to my grandmother, one of them just passed away, but the way they talk is just differently. Like when I speak in Quechua and Aymara, it sounds different. Like, the way they speak it is just beautiful. And, yeah, ooh. It's just a different way.
It's like a rhythm. It feels like a rhythm. Yeah. It's like a river. It just flows really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's more than the flow. It's just like a different way to see the world. Let me tell you like that. Because like here we say, oh, hi, right? But in Quechua we say, Alilian Chimainalian. Like, how are you?
That's beautiful.
like, oh, goodbye. I'll see you around. No, we say like, Tupananchis Kama, like, we're going to meet again, like until I see you again. It doesn't matter if it's in the other life. Everything is so beautiful, meaningful. So it's literally like, why? Yeah. So it's just like another way to see the world.
Okay. So how do we say goodbye again?
I love it.
No. We got to learn this. I mean, I might say this every time. Goodbye. Because no, but you were just saying it when we depart from each other.
We say Tupananchis Kama or Pakarin Kama or like until we meet again, which means.
So it's Tupananchis Kama. Tupanachiskama? Did I say that?
Tupanachiskama?
Yeah. Tupanachiskama until we meet again. Mm-hmm.
Until we meet again. Tupanachiskama, see?
Or in the other life. Mm-hmm.
All right, Christy, like what are you working on?
So cute.
Yeah, right? I'm over here. That's, and by the way, that's how we're going to end the show. We're going to say Tupana Chiscana, and then we're just going to, until we meet again, because we will meet again. We definitely meet again. I'm interested in what projects you guys are working on. Christy, what are you working on now?
Yeah, I'm still riding the high from La Leaf. So we're submitting to film festivals and working on writing more, like focusing on telling stories that I want to tell. So that's my next steps for me.
What about you, Sebastian?
Yeah, same. I've just been a bunch trying to do, you know, indigenous stories and give them the Hollywood treatment. You know, I'm very much into sci-fi and horror right now. So doing a lot of horror stories mixed with
sci-fi and horror,
folklore. Yeah, you know, we want to see Latinos in space, and we want to see horror movies with Latinos just winning.
So when you mean space, you mean outer space.
Outer space, yeah.
As in like Latinos in Star Wars type stuff, yeah. Like
yeah. Latino astronauts. Hell yeah!
Because a lot of our indigenous societies and a lot of our indigenous people have records of talking to other entities from the stars.
Yeah,
and there are words for that, and there are pictures, and there are artifacts that reflect that. So that's where a lot of our history is probably there, and we don't even know.
What about you, Cisa?
Absolutely.
Right now, I'm working on pre-production in my short film that I'm shooting next month. It's about this Peruvian American who travels to the Andes to accomplish, no matter what, this promise she made to her grandmother as a way to look for closure. And she will meet this Indian young man who is going to guide her through the Andes to help her with this promise. And, you know, she will find just a new beginning in her identity journey, you know. So it's a lot about reconnecting. And I think this is a very important story to tell, because we don't really see stories about, you know, people reclaiming our heritage and saying, you know, like, I am so proud to be, I met it, like, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a very beautiful story that I want to share with you all. And I'm just really excited. I'm working with two indigenous communities, one from the Sacred Valley, one for like either really deep in the Andes. And the crew is going to be mostly indigenous people from the area. You know, because there is this word that it resonates with all indigenous people from this continent, and it's reciprocity. And not even this continent. Like, I can tell you about the Maori people.
Others as well, yeah.
And reciprocity means, like, it's more than just give and receive. It's like it transcends. It transcends both of us. It transcends our communities. It transcends time. So I'm really looking forward, like, to have, you know, to work with my indigenous friends, and that they feel inspired to keep creating. And one of them is already writing a show, you know, because it's so important for us to tell our own stories. Yeah. So this is my upcoming short film. It's named Su Último Deseo, Her Last Wish, and it's going to be in Spanish and in Quechua.
That's so beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome. That is going to be really cool.
No, that's going to be so amazing. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Starting off with Cisa, if people wanted to follow you or get in touch with you, where could they go?
Cisa, S-I-S-A underscore Q-U-I-S-P-E, Cisa Quispe. I'm on Instagram, TikTok. I'm not active as much because right now I'm like back in school.
She's everywhere.
I'm studying a master's right now. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I used to be more active, but yes, you can find me on TikTok, on IG. I have a tech talk. You can find me on YouTube as well. And yes, well, yeah.
Awesome. How about you, Christy?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's just Christy Uribe, so really complicated. Yeah, you'll see lots of pictures of my cat. So please do follow me.
She's got a whole Catstagram.
Oh, yeah. Ready with the cat memes.
Just watch out. Yeah.
Awesome.
That is hilarious. And
finally, how about you, Sebastian?
So you can find me on Instagram. My handle is I'm Just Too Illmatic. It's an homage to Nas' best album, rap album of all time, Illmatic. And also find me on Facebook, Twitter, Sebs14. I'm also on TikTok. You can just Google me, Sebastian Rea. And you can check out my films on SebastianRea.com. First name, last name. And that's about it. Yeah.
All right, guys, thank you for watching this special edition of Indigenous Latinidad panel, part of the Revolución Hispanic Heritage 30-day virtual event presented by Celso Drinks and brought to you by WAFI Media. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at Todo WAFI and part of the many other panels to come. Make sure you guys watch those. Go to www.todowafi.com and or YouTube. Where you can listen to it, even on your favorite podcast channel. You can catch it there. You can catch the entire schedule of Revolución. I'm Rafael. That is Nicole. That is Cisa. That is Sebastian. And that is Christy. And we're out.
Desde Nicaragua hasta Costa Rica, con esta canción todo mundo se identifica. Llamen a los chilenos y a los cubanos, llamen a Puerto Rico y a los mexicanos, que ya se armó la rumba. Desde Panamá hasta Ecuador, vámonos a Perú y luego hasta Salvador. Que se escuche en Brasil y Argentina. Estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí mira no existen fronteras.